All right, last week, not a great one for the stalwarts, was it? The most experienced BOC team ever got hammered physically by an Irish team. Novak Djokovic, the most decorated sportsman of all time, basically, and tennis great. He had absolutely no chance and was massacred by young Carlos Alcaraz. And Donald Trump as well. Someone tried to end his career slash life. But new beginnings and new things going forward, we've got to pick ourselves up after that BOC loss. I know it's quite difficult because we tie so much of our identities now as South Africans to BOC winning. So when a plucky Irish oak comes over here and Joel Stransky's us in the 80th minute, it really does hurt. But maybe a loss is actually not a bad thing for Rusty and his team right now. I mean, if we just relied on a few Pollard penalties to get us through there, maybe we'd have papered over some of the cracks that we might actually need to get more into going forward, which all makes this weekend's test against Portugal all the more interesting, really, because it's not just a game for the fringe team to come out here and give Portugal their biggest game. It's actually a legit test match to come and stake your claim for the rugby championships and beyond. Speaking of succession plans, England need a new manager because Gareth Southgate is now gone. Who's that going to be? Well, we'll unpack that and so much more right here on The Bounce Show this week. Let's get into it. All right, welcome to it. This is the On The Bounce Show. It is number 6. This is the 6th episode with me, Ben Karpinski, and my co-host, Sandile Shangas, right here.
What's happening, brothers?
And we've got James on the microphone, the off-camera microphone.
How's it?
Yeah, that's James over there. So if you do hear a voice, it's not like you're not going to cross-feed or anything. It's actually James.
The James.
It's not God. It's just
James. What a great week for James and stuff like that.
You know, ever since, obviously, Spain won last week. So I've got two gloaters either side of me over here because Sandile finally got all his picks right. He went full Spanish last week. And then if you give James a moment of silence, he will basically tell us how he backed Spain from the start.
We'll wait for that. Are we going to jump into it right now or are we going to wait for that before we... James, way to get it right. Do you want to talk about it? Go first.
I mean, I was willing to wait till yours, but I do just want to say, guys, I did call Spain from the start. No one believed me, but here we are.
Yeah, it's 4 weeks later, the way he says it, I don't believe him. But look, okay, let's kick off with the BOC because, like I said in the intro there, I think for a lot of people, they become so accustomed to the BOC winning that a loss, it really, really stings. But I mean, is it the worst thing? You never want to lose in international rugby, but we lost by 1 point to the second best team in the world. So I don't think we should be too heart sore about this.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I mean, we're so used to the Springboks covering all our sporting issues. I think post-pro tiers, we just wanted the Springboks to wipe everybody off. What a great test.
It really was. First and foremost, let's acknowledge that.
That was a great, test. First of all, I've got to talk about the format. We've got to get a third test into this. 2 games is just not it. We all wanted one more, just to decide this. And now we've got to wait, I don't know how many more years before we get, another test like this. But
also what it proves all the time, we need more tours in rugby.
Exactly. And I think, one thing that I love about the Irish fans is that they're willing to give it as much as we're willing to give it. And they had a great time. Not too many barbaric issues, great sportsmen, great people who love the game. So I'm super excited about that. I saw the video clip of them, in Durban, giving us hell as well. We gave them hell. So we also owe you an apology. Yes, I will finally admit, maybe you are a rival. This 1-1 thing is a great thing, one for us.
Sorry, hang a second. Who are you apologizing to there?
The people... I will apologize to Brian Habana when I said he is wrong for saying that.
Oh.
VH said he was not that. I said they were not rivals. I think they are. They actually showed that they could adjust to a strategy and they came out guns blazing. I'm really not mad about the 1 point loss. It was a great test. Yes, we lost, but it's great to lose. Those type of games, it goes either way.
Yeah, of course, if you missed the episode with Brian Habana, and if you missed any of the episodes of the show previously, just go onto YouTube or any of the podcast platforms. But there was a big kind of debate that we had around, obviously, the BOC's major rival in the world is the All Blacks. Yeah. But more and more so nowadays, it's become Ireland. And then Brian was making the point that this is a big deal. Yeah. And then Sandile basically told him that he knows nothing about rugby. It was a very awkward moment in the studio.
I did not say. There was tension. I disagreed, guys. I can disagree with the Springbok legend.
But it is. Yeah. And, the games have been so tight. Mm. And if you look at it on aggregate, I think we won that 2-test series by 6 points. Look, we said the first test was going to be flattering towards the Irish. You can, again, pinpoint different sort of things. But they were full value for that second test. They started bloody well. Yeah. We came back, but then we failed to close it out.
Yeah.
So the question goes here is, like, when people always think, like, the Springboks are amazing. They're actually not. They're amazing in the World Cups. If you dig a little bit, our win record over the years is roughly about 67-68%. That means that we lose.
We like Italy. We like a BMT. Maybe a BMT team.
But maybe we lose a 1-3.
Yeah.
Or just over, okay? But yeah, slightly better than that. So, yes, it sucks to lose. We won 3-1 pointers in the World Cup. So, I don't want to be like disparaging around this, but again, maybe it's just a bit of humble pie that just to get us back on track here. We're not the most incredible team. We're a fantastic World Cup team. Yeah. And I think this team now, to build on that reality, yeah, I reckon it's a really good thing.
I think both teams as well. You know, I think both teams go to their respective tournaments and take their learnings and probably go on and win their various championships, you know, because you 1 and 2 go face each other. They kind of know that we've played the best teams that we can play.
Yeah.
What are the adjustments that we can make? And also, surprisingly, well, we're probably going to talk about it, is Ireland was super physical in this game, which they weren't in the first game, which was, I think we underestimated that physicality. I mean, when Billy Roo goes out and Malcolm Marks go out, we're going to jump into that politic. But they came out willing to smash us, coming, you know, came with some very, very hard rugby. And I think we took them lightly. We should never let them, you know, get that advantage off the beginning, you know. I think there was the gap that we just, once Billy went off, you know, we're kind of like scrambling to figure out what our game plan was. And I think it's the first time I've seen, you know, Rossi, you know, try to have to adjust and get to halftime and say, guys, let's try to figure it out.
It's a very good point you make there, because in the build-up to the Durban test, it's like so much was spoken about these pods and the attacking play and all this kind of stuff. The Springboks forgot the fact that they've still got to be hard bastards. Mm. And the Irish came in there, basically. It looks like the Irish went to some Durban boxing gym for a whole week,
yeah,
and just basically hard bastarded themselves up, yeah, to get to that game, because they were so physical. I mean, there was the attempted murder on Malcolm Marks as well, to really just pinpoint how aggressive they really were. Yeah. And that's how you also win these test matches. So I think kudos to Rossi to want to expand the game plan, and we'll see the fruits of that, no doubt.
Yeah.
But it's just so hard because the margins are so tiny at that top level. Yeah. You've got to have your bread and butter, which is Bluxoming Oaks and being very tight, closing games out, that kind of stuff, good exits.
Yeah.
But the Irish, I mean, that we know that's a good team. And that team was missing, let's conservatively say, 5 starting members of that team.
Yeah.
Good. I mean, credit to Keelan Doris. I think his first name's Irish. I'm going to mess that up. But
no, give it a bash. I was not going to give it a bash.
And that looks 26, and he led such an incredible team performance there. So all we can say is well done to the Irish, probably a fitting result. And now on to the next thing, which is this next BOC team. Hamas, can you pull up the this BOC team for Saturday? Because, of course, it's a, you know, wholesale changes here.
As Hamas is pulling that up, I think we always knew coming under the new strategy with Tony Brown, with the enterprising rugby, we can't win them all. So yeah, I think, you know, as Springbok fans, we got to understand that now the adjustments will be made now. I think there was a flattering result for us on our end, which we never talk about, us winning in with Tony Brown's strategy immediately. Of course, we're going to have to get humbled. So we know how to adjust between pure physicality and enterprising rugby. I think there were times in the game where we were too enterprising, and that's where we got, you know, that's when we got slammed. Whereas Ireland had a set, you know, set strategy going out, you know, throughout, you know, the, yeah, you know, the tour.
So if we look at the team for this weekend, obviously Marnie Libbok's back. I would have loved to have seen Grant Williams,
yes,
and Marnie as the 9-10. It's actually kind of weird because this always sounds so shit, and I'm sure Corbis Reiner hates hearing this, but he's the kind of guy that you know what you're going to get from.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's like if, say, Faf goes down, this can start like he did in the World Cup. Grant Williams and Marnie Libbok, if we are going to play the ball in hand, what a dynamic duo to have a bit of a run. Mm-hmm. But Rossi has gone with this one. Salman Morat, he will captain. Be the, I think, the 55th. Is it 55th or 66th BOC captain? I should have looked that up. Yep. But yeah, incredibly inexperienced BOC pack. I think the average caps over those Oaks is 8.
We like to see it. I think just we like to see one of my players is there from the Klipdrift, my Klipdrift spin and win, Thomas Du Toit. But we like to see, you know.
Is that how you pulled this week?
Yes,
that's okay. We'll get into that in a second.
But there's some players that, you know, we wanted to see come back in, especially for Portugal. Yeah. For me is, you know, with Jesse Creel making such great headway, where does Lucanha Arm now come back into the fold? So we're going to see how fit Lucanha Arm is. I really want him to have, you know, a splendid game, get through it without any problems. You know, Apelele Fassi as well. Get some minutes under your belt. Really get, you know, adjusted into the Springbok, you know, system of working things.
But do you think that's a good call? Again, because the other counter argument is that Sasha Fanabeng-Gomezulu, he could have played 15 this game to get the minutes up, because we kind of know what we got with Fassi as well.
Oh, no, we don't worry. Sasha is the wave of the future. We already saw that when Villarreal went down. We know that once Villarreal retires, that's his definitely spot. I think he showed it at a very, very high level.
You reckon? He even said he felt intimidated and he felt daunted over the weekend. He made a couple of technical mistakes. I'm saying, like,
I'd hate to see how he feels when he feels 100% comfortable, because if that's him raw, man, we're in a great place.
Oh, no, absolutely. But the guy just needs time there, because he can play 10, he can play 12, he can play 15. But at that highest level of the game, you don't just run on and play a position.
Yeah.
And 15 is a hectic position.
Heavy position.
Tactically and technically, you need to be on these kind of things. And again, it was shown again. If there is still any Villy haters out there, the Euros are just deranged, or you just hate life and rugby.
Yeah.
Because when Villy dropped out of the URC, the Bulls suddenly went from winning to losing.
Yeah.
Villy went down first few minutes of the Bok test against Ireland. The rest of the game, they were nowhere on attack.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds sensationalist, but they weren't clinical on attack. They weren't running through the plays, and they weren't playing good phase play. Yeah. And that's Villy.
Yeah, Villy's a tactician, master tactician, as we've always spoken about. I hope this... I don't know if it's been diagnosed as another concussion, because this will be the second one. This will be the second one in, you know, such a short period of time. I hope he's able to continue with his career, because we would love him to get to 100, you know. I think he's been so great for the Springboks. So I don't know if there's been any conclusion with that, but, you know, after the second concussion, you know, it's always touch and go about whether he should play on moving forward.
Well, it's another back three player with the scrum cap on, so that's not a bad thing either.
You know, so I really hope, you know, with all the crazy other injuries we've had, I mean, Malcolm Mock's one, we've got to talk about it. We've got to talk about that. I think there should be a higher suspension of that, because we can see it's two players attacking his leg.
Well, especially with the new rules, the crocodile roll was identified as something that had to be thrown away.
Yeah.
And it was a blatant crocodile roll. So he's out now with a fractured tibia. We've got Peter Septetoy, unknown.
Six, 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah. 4 to 6 weeks. We've got Franco Mostert, also with a broken leg. So those are big players that are not going to be part of the mix here.
Yeah.
But again, this is why this Portugal game is so good, because these Oaks aren't just playing to show fringe. There's actual spots up for grabs.
Yeah.
And that's pretty damn exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. It's going to, you know, we spoke about the depth as well. I think we're going to see some new players come through that system now, especially with stalwarts, seeing their time. You know, their new positions up for grabs. You know, I saw Kwan Horn, who we've been raving about. He made, you know, the 23. Hopefully he gets a run. Yeah, I'm excited of where we're going through as SA Rugby, because, you know, with Tony Brown coming in, there's going to be a lot of speed that we're going to try implement in our system, and, you know, we're going to see from there.
Yeah, I think the forward pack will just go back to some primal sort of instincts if the games do get tougher.
Yeah, man, this Portugal game, I hope they knock some people out and we scram our lives away.
But also, like, Durban's just proven it's not a good place for rugby. I mean, the Sharks were cuck there for so long now, and now the Springboks go there and they were also cuck. Got a comment here from Dirk. Does one dropkick define number one and two? If SA won, then the debate was over. SA is ranked world number one before and after the series and world champions. So they won the series on points difference. Yeah, Dirk, it's not about, no. I guess, look, come on, we are number one. And a dropkick is, yeah, I mean, a game of fine margins. I don't think that's really the issue here. It's a team that should have closed it out. And I think that's what it comes back to. At this level of the game, it's the bragging rights.
100%.
Ireland have bragging rights that they came here and didn't lose the series. They came here and they won a test. SA are going to feel like they shortchanged themselves because they didn't close out those Oaks for the series win. Anyway, I think it's a massive problem.
I just want to come back to it. It's for me, it's a non-starter. It's really about winning games. I mean, Joel Stransky's drop kick, you know, it's always a debate now, because now John Olomi doesn't have a World Cup, you know? So winning games is the most important thing of rugby. And you ask any athlete that, you know, It's really about winning games. It's not about how you win it. It's really about, you know, we needed that to close out this conversation as them being a rival. Now they are definitely a rival. So, Dirk.
Yeah, that's great.
I'd hate to disagree with you on it. It matters, and we lost that game. We should have won it.
But good on the note, slotting those two drop kicks. Whether he was given too much ball for that to happen, and again, it's another issue. But look, we need to move off rugby because we've got...
I wish Cheslin Kobe dove on that and got that obstruction, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, but I don't know. It could have been... Look, there's always ifs and buts, but ultimately you've got to say that sometimes on the day you just aren't the winner.
100%.
We had 3 1-point victories in the World Cup, and now we've taken one on the chin.
Yeah,
and
no, it sucks. I got you.
But speaking about rugby, of course, as we go into this next test match, as with all the BOC test matches that are being played this season, sure. The Clip Drift That's Gold campaign. Mm. So we've been speaking about it every single week, that you draw your player on the website. I promise you're doing well on the screens. I was like, he's killing it this week.
Oh, today you're on the ball. I love it.
So if you go to clipdriftthatsgold.co.za and you follow the prompts from there, basically you get to pick a player. You watch your player. The better they do, the more points you score. And then you get to spin for some prizes after the match. 100%. It's so fun. The stuff that we talk about on our group WhatsApp, our WhatsApp group, is really, really fun. This week I've got Arkias Neyman. Who you got?
I've got Thomas de Toit.
Thomas de Toit?
I hope nothing happens to him. I had Willie LaRue last week, so I'm hoping I'm not a little bit of an omen.
How much have you got? You need the microphone there, bud.
I forget about this microphone thing. I got Marnie LeBoc. I've gone up to 7th in the pool also. So this last weekend,
okay,
I could shoot ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, you can join our pool as well. So there's going to be prizes that we're going to start announcing from next week. So every time the BOC play, get onto the website, pick your player, and then you can go into our pool. James, what's our pool looking like? What's the code there?
It's 95A51. It's on, okay, brilliant. On the pool.
So yeah, congrats to Mfundo. He's currently at the top of the bounce pool. I'm coming back this week. I can feel it. Arkias Neyman is going to score four tries because he's 4 foot taller than any Portuguese oak out there. I'm feeling very strong about this.
We need you, Thomas.
All right, Euros. Aftermath. England, they were never going to win that.
Oh.
And they didn't.
Oh.
Harry...
Can I jump in? Harold Kane started to feel like Alan Donald right now. Another cup final and Harold Kane has blown it. I really think it's Harold Kane now. I mean, he couldn't. I mean, Bayern Munich, 12 years, you know, first time they didn't win anything. Tottenham Hotspur since that hasn't won anything. England, 2 finals, hasn't won anything. But, geez, England, you know, they were playing poorly throughout. And Spain has been playing incredibly, as we spoke about last week. Testament to their system, testament to their youth, testament for them backing those players. Stars, soon to be stars.
Sure.
England, got to go back to the drawing board. And we've seen it. Gareth Southgate's officially resigned. He stepped down. I'm great he did it himself instead of him, you know, being fired. I think he must have been kicked out. What in the street is Pep Guardiola?
I like that. I like it for a lot of good reasons too. Because what more can he do with Man City other than go to a court case? Because that's the next thing on their sort of timeline.
Yeah, it's a bit of a cop-out.
But, I mean, he's done so much as a club manager. The England job's great. I would love to get that England job. The pressure, I mean, expectations are low, let's be honest. Because I know everyone keeps saying, oh, he's got to win the title. But everyone deep down knows they're not going to win the title. I haven't got the players. But... he can go in there and he can be himself. He'll get the full reins to do whatever he wants with the national team. And a guy like that who's achieved everything wants national honors. Yeah. England, like, it's a decent team to pick up to make something out of.
Yeah, so it's been such an interesting debate with, you know, the England coaching job. There was the women's coach who's been approached as well. She respectfully declined because they've just won a World Cup. They've just did well in the Euros as well. And, you know, she said respectfully, I coach the women's team. I am not going in there. Let them deal with their own set of problems. And she's literally changed that, you know, that program. But it's interesting what's going to happen with England. We've always talked about them having more camps, more, you know, trials, more team building, because ultimately what we've seen is teams that are built throughout, you know, their system are going to win these major tournaments. Who are prepared for that? You know, teams like Austria, teams like Turkey, who are actually prepared for the Euros, maybe 2-3 years ago when they built a team to get through that system. Whereas England, as they always do, they've tried to bring a whole bunch of superstars together and figure it out on the field. And they were never able to do it. Same issue France had, same issue Germany had to a certain extent. Whereas, you know, Spain, they came through. They knew who they were going to bring into the system. They knew who was going to carry them through to the World Cup, because a lot of these players who are playing for England aren't probably going to be in the next World Cup. Kyle Walker's going to get on age. You know, we don't know what happens with Harry Kane. He's also getting on age, even though he will probably be there. But there's a system issue that is a big, big issue with Gareth Southgate. And in true English fashion, it was almost there, but no cigar. I think they really need to think about developing their program.
But that's why I think a Pep Guardiola will be the guy for that, because then he adds profile to that whole thing. If you're asking these players to give more of themselves and apply themselves more, and you've got a no-name person manager, with all respect to anybody who else is in this job, Pep Guardiola is the guy. Players want to play under that guy.
100%.
And, I mean, it's the only way that Phil Foden's getting picked for the next World Cup. I mean, let's be honest with that one as well. So I think it'd be a good move. I mean, like, what would be the incentive? Okay, so 2025 is when his contract means he's done.
Yeah.
So they'll have to wait a season anyway. So then obviously bring in Sam Allardyce for this interim stage.
Oh, my God. They can't bring Sam Allardyce. Oh, my goodness. The word on the street is they're also talking about, like, David Moyes. I think for the first time,
I think every now and again, you've got to have a postage stamp sort of manager to come in. If it's just for a season, an interim person, until you can get Pep.
Yeah. I think they need a certified winner, and that's where I back you with Pep Guardiola's ambition to win. We all know what we're going to get with Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola is going to build a team and a system that is going to win. So I really back that. I hope they don't go with a pretty average coach, because Gareth Southgate has no pedigree winning anything outside of anything.
But exactly. It's like you might as well just get like Gary Neville.
Yeah, you know, and
Michael Owen.
And he did well. And also, we can't even, you know, deny. So Gareth Southgate did well for where he came from and what he did.
Yeah,
you know,
fair enough.
It's not really an indictment. Fair enough. It's not an indictment on Gareth Southgate. His run as England coach was pretty successful. You know, two World Cups, he went pretty deep. Back-to-back Euros, you know, in a final, you win or you lose, you know, and he's just lost two, which is terrible, but he took that team there. You know, whether by hook or by crook,
yeah,
he can go into any top league as a European coach and hopefully, you know, build the credentials to be super good.
Yeah, I would say the previous Euros was more of a hard take because England scored first. They played at home and ultimately they lost to Italy on penalties. Here, they were outclassed by a much better team.
A younger team.
They conceded first and then they ultimately lost 2-1.
I think this one's going to hurt because they have all the talent. They probably won't have arguably a Ballon d'Or winner ever again. Who's going to be at this level? A top striker.
Phil Foden.
A top striker, Harold Kane. A good-ish, you know, back line. They lost it tactically, and that's the biggest indictment on, you know, on England, because they were outright favorites.
Yeah. Well, they were, as you pointed out, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so look, FIFA World Cup 2026, it's around the corner. Yeah. These things happen very, very quickly. Pep will then have a year, if he comes in, to then turn it around. So, I mean, it's cutting it fine. But did you see anything out of the Euros that would then say any of these teams are going to be proper prospects for the World Cup, bearing in mind as well, at the same time, the Copa America was happening and Argentina won that. So did either of those tournaments make you think, I'm already seeing a favorite here?
Well, for me, Spain. I think Spain with that attack, and it's only maturing throughout their leagues. You know, I think Yamal come 16, he's going to be 20, 18, maybe next World Cup. He's only going to go strength to strength. His body's going to grow. He's still, you know, all these things. He's going to go through another stage of puberty.
Well, the final stage.
Or whatever. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, and the way, and I've been going on and on about how, unlike all these big teams where they've got big egos running that team, it feels like that team plays for each other.
Yeah.
And they've done the first step of winning a Euros very young. Because if you remember when Spain won the Euros and the World Cup, those guys were seasoned veterans when they won it. So they have a big, big projected success, because these guys are 18, 20, 22. The old guard is, what, Morata? And, you know, they've got a long time to, you know, make mistakes, get better in, you know, their EPL seasons, and, you know, run without an ego, which is hardly said about top European nations. You look when we talk about Portugal. You know, we've got Cristiano whining the whole time, but, you know, Yamal's there probably earning like 65,000, you know, euros a week, but he's there jamming every day, getting that experience, and now he's only going to get better by playing in a world-class league.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now with the Copa America,
yes.
How old is the Argentina team?
50.
So it's an aging team, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's done.
credit to them for winning that, because it's the biggest thing they can win regionally, just like the Euros. So they beat Colombia in the they beat Colombia in the finals.
Yeah.
So that's cool. As you said last week, Brazil are kind of nowhere nowadays.
Yeah, they finished.
Uruguay are thereabouts, but not exactly looking at them as like a World Cup threat.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and I know James does, that Spain are very much your initial sort of favorites for 2026.
I thought it was going to take this Spain team like a lot longer to win silverware. At the 20.
Come on, pick a lane here.
Yeah, you pick a lane.
You said there was no doubting them winning.
We teed you up to take your.
And now all of a sudden he's like leaned back in his chair like a seasoned pundit and going, you know, I was expecting longer on silverware.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, they were a lot younger when we saw most of this team at the last World Cup, right? Yeah.
And most weren't there.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought like some of them would only reach peak at this 2026 World Cup. They've already gone and done it and won some silverware. Proven winners. I think the Spain squad's going places. The Argentina squad, very old.
Very old.
Okay. Last World Cup for Messi. Kane's also said that he's going to take inspiration from Messi to try and play more World Cups.
Or win something.
I did see a great meme that said Harry Kane would give anything to have won the trophy. So it's like, what? Give nothing for everything.
The one thing I want to say about this Argentina team is this is probably their golden generation. You know, we always used to call Argentina serial chokers. They've won everything that they can win. It's two Copas, one World Cup. I will be okay if Messi now says, I retire from international football and let it run into, you know, into the sunset, because he didn't even finish the final. You know, he's got an ankle injury. Di Maria went out.
Di Maria's old as Pepe, isn't he?
He's giving that energy. But he also announced his retirement, and he's probably one of the greatest Argentinian players of all time.
Yeah, cool.
And you know, Messi, and I hate to say it again, he stamped his conversation as probably being the greatest football player of all time. And it breaks my heart. But he is the GOAT.
He is. Look, there was one negative about Copa this year, of course. So Ecuador apparently meant to host it. They pulled out, and America was like, yeah, cool, we'll do it. But, you know, we saw most of the scenes from that final. It was a disaster. People with tickets couldn't get in. People were climbing into the vents. There was a stampede. The game started like 80 minutes too late. Everything was just terrible. And people are saying that America aren't ready to host a World Cup. But ultimately, the CONMEBOL or whatever it is.
CONMEBOL
elected. They don't know how to like run things very well. And they're a bit dodgy, overpriced tickets. Don't blame America. Blame CONMEBOL.
Yeah, I wanted to look. The scenes were unfortunate.
Very.
We saw like children being pushed over, and it's a major final. You know, people are always going to take chances. I think it's not an indictment. I mean, this country's hosted a World Cup. You know, they've done major tournaments before. I think it's a lack of preparation through their sporting body. You know, so let's not give them too much of a hard time. You know, it was terrible. But it's not an indictment on the states and them hosting any major events.
Okay, Wimbledon. Now, I obviously was upset that Sinner didn't make it through, but I was happy that Djokovic was there. Djokovic looked great in his semi. He beat that young Italian man. And that Italian guy, sorry, I forget his name now, but he was like, just couldn't win today. It's a different kind of Novak that I've seen. It was just too good. It was just impossible to play against him. Gets to the final. The Oak doesn't even get a sniff of Carlos Alcaraz. Loses in straight sets.
Straight.
Hammered.
I tuned in off the paddle. Shout out to paddle. And I was like, okay, we're in for a long night. You know, I can go straight into the Euros. We're going to get into... Did I not see the first time ever Novak Djokovic get outplayed? And you know, and he fought back.
He did. To his credit, he manned up back in that third set.
But they're just absolutely amazing shots that Carlos played. Alcaraz, want to get it right.
But he hits winners from winners. Like Djokovic would get winners against most people. This Oak's not hitting it back.
And he's super athletic.
Yeah.
You deal with Novak drop shot, he gets there and puts it in a corner. And like I said, same thing with Yamal. It's going to be crazy at 28 where this guy is going to be, you know, because his game is only going to mature. He's not going to have to be as aggressive. He's going to learn how to balance the athleticism and great shots.
Well, kind of like Djokovic too. Exactly. I mean, he was also huge athletic because he was a small guy. He had to work hard for the points. He couldn't overpower people.
Yeah.
And all those things, they made him evolve.
But what was awesome about watching this final was Novak also enjoying. also seeing that there is a changing of the guard. There's certain shots where Novak is looking at himself and be like, I played a great shot. He just played a greater shot, you know? So, you know, one thing I enjoy about, I wouldn't call it a rivalry. I would call it like the appreciation of the changing of the guard is we can all see it coming. We can all see that this guy is going to be amazing. He's probably going to be a generational talent, barring any, you know, catastrophic injuries or anything like that. He is going to be here for a while. Yeah. And he's, you know, once you beat a GOAT consecutively, you kind of know that, okay, there's a changing of the guard. And like I said, grass, clay, cement, paddle court, clearly he can play this game. And he's here for a while. And I called it and I got it right. People in the comments, I told you, it's an all-Spanish affair.
Well, in many ways, it's actually the changing of the GOAT, really. When you think about it,
that was right.
But like Djokovic is, and I will fight anyone to death about this, Djokovic is the GOAT of tennis. Okay. You know what? This is actually like a good way to start what we need to get into is that we need to verify who these GOATs of sport are.
Oh, let's get into
it. In order to then have what the benchmark is for them to be eclipsed. Okay. So tennis is quite simple for me. Novak Djokovic is the GOAT. He's got 24 major titles, Grand Slam titles.
Yeah, we agree on that.
Carlos Alcaraz has got 4 and he's just all 21 years old.
Like I said, like you cannot, he's having a great run. I mean, what happens when Carlos meets somebody who comes in? Remember Nadal?
There'll always be someone, yeah.
Keeps on going like this, it's a matter of time.
So if you work it out between, I mean, we actually posted about this on our social channels earlier in the week. So if you were to look at Carlos at 21 up until Djokovic, who's now 37, he's roughly got 60 Grand Slams in order to win another 21 Grand Slams. So it's doable. It's absolutely doable. But then only then is Djokovic not the GOAT. So all you massive Federer fans out there or Nadal fans or
Why
Murray
are you
fans.
Hate on us because we're Federer fans.
Look, be a Federer fan. I love Federer. Everyone loves Federer.
He did it without sweating. And he's South African.
Exactly. And his hair was better. Look, Federer's great, but he's not the GOAT.
He's not.
He's not. It's Djokovic. It's like Serena is the GOAT. 100%. Why? Because she's got 23 Grand Slams. Until someone gets 24 Grand Slams, who is a woman playing tennis, Serena will be the GOAT.
Ooh, I hope this applies when we get to Formula One, but let's keep on going.
Okay, but like this is the thing. I want to lay down the criteria. So there, we've got two verification ticks on Novak Djokovic and Serena Williams. They are the two GOATs of tennis.
Okay.
Don't come with any other names here. Don't pull an ESPN and say Coco Gauff wins it because they just seem to like her more this season. Those are tried and tested.
Can I bring up that list? Oh, I'll find this out. How many, if you can find my phone somewhere there.
No, we'll get to it in a second.
Cool. Let's go.
Okay, so what else we got? Okay, so we got tennis. There's no debate. I'm not going to ask you about that because there's no debate. Basketball, right? People keep going on about the fact that LeBron is the GOAT. We watched The Last Dance. Everyone says Jordan's the GOAT.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Brian passed away. And then it was an emotional plea to make him the GOAT. But again, let's go back to it, right? NBA Finals wins. Understanding is Jordan's got 6.
Look, it's always there's a big debate about the NBA. So Bill Russell's got 11, but it was, you know, a different time in, you know, the NBA. Jordan's 6-6, Finals MVP in all of them, season MVP in all of them, defensive player of the year in all of them. When it comes to winning and winning chips, at his position without the height of being a center, Michael Jordan is the greatest. And also, he retired in his peak and came back and won 3 on a trot. So if he never retired 94, 95, he probably would have gone 8.
Yeah.
And would have cemented that. But, you know, Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time. I am going to say it and people can fight me. Kobe Bryant is my favorite. LeBron James has the greatest NBA career of all time because he's
so key word there. You said favorite again. Yeah. Go back to your Federer fans. Yeah. He can be your favorite. Yes. He's not the GOAT.
Yes,
Kobe Bryant could be your favorite. He's not the GOAT. It is Michael Jordan. We're gonna make it rain on MJ all day. Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
There's another tick.
Yeah.
NFL. Obviously, you got to go the fact that Tom Brady has just been prolific, right? He's got 7 of those gaudy rings that Americans love to have.
Yeah.
So he's so great. He needs a second hand to show you how great he is.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes, any of those.
Carlos Alcaraz. Given Carlos Alcaraz.
He's Carlos Alcaraz. Great. We'll give him all the credit, but he needs to get to 8. Once he gets to 8, he can be the GOAT of NFL.
100%.
I feel like this game is quite easy to follow so far.
Yeah.
Let's go a little bit further. Boxing's a bit of a shit show.
No, see, when it comes to boxing, it's really about different strokes for different folks, because we got to either go divisions.
See, okay, so this is why boxing shows you more about the goat thing, because you can have more goats in a certain sport because of different criteria.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, so now we've got heavyweights, welterweights, middleweights, super middleweights, cruiserweights. There's a lot of weights in boxing. Yeah. So if you want to have like a general goat, you would say it's Floyd Mayweather, because 12 titles in 5 different divisions and he's 50-0. Okay, so he's a general. You could throw it out. They don't know too much about the sport.
But he's only fought 56 fights. So if you look...
It's a lot of fights.
It's still a lot of fights.
I mean, he's... It's professional records. It's professional records, 50-0.
Yeah, 100%.
So where's the other six?
I think it's them, you know, your YouTube brews and stuff. I don't know. Conor McGregor and all these
Conor McGregor was a legitimate professional fight. Conor was sanctioned as a professional boxer.
So we'll call it 50-0.
That's what gave him 50.
Oh, whatever.
He raised his bat with Conor.
Oh, whatever. Is the other YouTube one as well? Because, yeah. You see, I look like someone like Ali who fought like, I think it was 100 fights. I just don't forget the number. It's a large amount of fights. His percentage is not as great as Mayweather, but also was retired in his peak. Defended his titles for a lot of time. Olympic champion, which I know in boxing means a lot as well. Mayweather not. You know, he's a silver medalist or cheated out of it. You know, there's the whole hoo-ha about Floyd Mayweather not being given that title, you know, when he actually wanted to against the Russian guy. So, listen, I acknowledge Floyd Mayweather as 100% one of the greatest, shifted the nature of boxing and monetized it in an era when we needed it to be monetized. So generational. I will say he's a generational talent in boxing. Is he the GOAT? Somebody going to have to come validate Ali and Mike Tyson.
I would say he gets a GOAT status, right? Now, 100%. The other ones that we verified are very much like proper. So, yep. So he's in the conversation. He's there. Boxing fans, I know you're probably shouting at the screen right now. What about this guy? This guy? I know there's lots. But I think we want to have the verified GOATs for this one. Which brings us into golf. And again, this is a difficult one.
Oof, this is a difficult one.
Because Jack Nicklaus won 18 majors. And he finished second in another 18. And then, incredible, right?
And then you know who the GOAT is, right? Come, Ben. Ben. Let's not fight it.
Let me go into it. Jack Nicklaus played in an era where, I mean, golf was pretty... What's the word? Is it segregated or exclusive? Because it was heavily on both sides of that, right? Okay. It was a very small sporting population. It was a bit of a boys' club. And these are all sort of facts. I don't think he had the most competitive fields around him, although he did have generational talents that fought against him in these tournaments. I get that. Tiger Woods, for me, is the verified GOAT.
Thank you.
Because he changed the sports.
Yeah, but...
And golf changed in his era because of him. They had to raise the game from this dude. Yeah. These oaks were getting pissed after every round. Tiger went to the gym. Golf changed.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you got athletes playing in this. You got competitive players. So much more money came into the game. So, yes, Tiger's got 15 major championships. So, he's 3 short.
Yeah.
But also, because of all his whoring, he was out for so many years.
Ben, come on. Forgive him, man. He was on a journey of
what
self-discovery.
Mean, forgive him. I'm just a journey
of self-discovery.
I'm stating the facts here. Tiger was a winner on and off the golf course. His other sport was banging chicks. Yep. We know that. I'm not judging him. I'm just saying that if he wasn't so, I don't know, loss, then he might have had 18. So all the people who said, no, he's not as good as Jack, I think we need to look at this as an exception and say, Tiger is the GOAT for the way he won and how he dominated.
And as you were talking about, and the same thing I brought in with Michael Jordan, is an era thing. Yes, you might not have the most, but if you're in an era where we're all professional athletes, you've changed the game, you've gone 15 years, and I don't know if there is, you know, a timeline on how long Tiger's been playing as compared to, you know, the other guy you mentioned.
Jack Nicklaus.
I don't want to throw him out. Like, I just say Tiger Woods, generational talent, greatest of all time, because he brought everybody to golf. Same thing with Michael Jordan. 11 versus, you know, 15 versus 18. It's not like we're talking about 9 versus 18.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's there and thereabouts.
He's close enough to have the benefit of the doubt for this.
It's close enough. And I hope I'm not tricking myself for the Formula One. But yes, it's okay. Close enough.
Well, look, again, I'm verifying Tiger here. Verifying all it right time. There. Because I know it's difficult to sometimes compare eras. Obviously, it's like Dodd Bradman, greatest cricketer. Not really. Okay, so look, I'm verifying as Tiger. It's definitely that. Formula One. Let's look at it, right? because this is where it gets interesting as well, because Schumacher, 7 world titles, Hamilton, 7 world titles. If you look at individual races, Hamilton, 104 wins, Schumacher, 91. Who's the GOAT?
Okay, I'm going to have to be politically correct on this one.
No, that's not what we're looking for. We'll get Hamas to be politically correct. Who is it?
Hamas, who do you think before we jump in? Hamas, let's bring you back.
We jump in. I'll ask you a simple question.
Is this Lewis Hamilton, Mark Schumacher? Yeah. Who's the GOAT?
Yeah.
I am going to have to say Lewis Hamilton. I think in a very competitive time of Formula One, and to do it more times than Michael Schumacher ever did it.
Yep. And
but he didn't. I just told you, 7 all. You guys aren't listening to me.
No, but it's the other things that you talk about, the 104, the British Grand Prix stuff that's just happened now. These little stats that didn't matter before, they're now bringing them up, you know?
Okay, so is this your way of saying it's Lewis and only Lewis?
No. I'm saying it's closer, like we had with the Tiger Woods debate. I don't think it's a golfing class. I think for us to close the debate, Lewis has to go get it. The number 8. Number 8? Number 9? Number
he
eight.
Does have to get it.
Number 8. He needs to go get it, because a lot of us who are Schumacher fans are saying it's still Schumacher until you beat it. Because Schumacher beat number 6. The standard was 7. The standard was 7, so you have to go get 8. Once you get 8, you're the GOAT.
And he also won a title in that Benetton Renault car. Yeah. I mean, that's basically like driving a Budget around Sandton.
Yeah, and you know, we...
Just worth 2.
I hope you know we're going to get slammed. You know the Lewis Hamilton fans are... the Lewis Hamilton fans are the hardest guys.
Sandile, you make a great point, okay? Yeah. You've got to go and get it. Yes. And he's about to go to Ferrari. For him to go and get it in the car that Schumacher won 6 of his titles... He won it when the Bajaj and the 6 in the Ferraris. Yep. Okay. That would be the most fitting goatness come arrival of goatness ever. And then Lewis can go off into the sunset. It's fine.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So Lewis, our conclusion is Schumacher's the GOAT. You gotta go win the last one.
You gotta go get it.
And I know that those comments must be going absolutely insane.
They are. No, it's fine. It's fine. Schumacher was incredible, and it's just so sad that obviously he had the skiing thing, and he's just got into the shadows now.
Yeah.
So it's not like he can be at the races and be watching it and get his take on that. The sport lost so much just not having him around. Like other sports have people around.
Yeah, and you know, I think like I said, the Lewis Schumacher conversation is a bit closer because of what Lewis has now done for the sport.
Yeah,
Lewis has brought it into the forefront, made it popular culture. I was never a Formula One fan. And, you know, Schumacher, yes, when he left, nobody cared about it. Lewis came through, became a generational talent, came through, brought the rest of us non-F1 people into the mix, and we're here for it.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of people in the comments are basically saying that it's Lewis.
Get ripped apart, right?
But that's fair. Okay, football. I think the football one is super, super simple.
Is it?
So Lionel Messi, I think it's so super simple because he's the ultimate professional who's achieved the most over the longest time period. Because again, we're looking at a criteria. We need a criteria for a GOAT so we know what the next person needs to do in order to get it. So if you look at Messi, he's been the Ballon d'Or. He was great in European clubs. He's done the World Cup, the Copa. He's been the Golden Boot. Every accolade is basically Lionel Messi. Who else can come and actually lay claim to any of the things he's done?
Okay, cool. I'm going to concede on this. I think, you know, the biggest indictment on that...
I want you to fight me on that.
And I try to.
I would fight you.
My GOAT, my personal GOAT.
Yes.
And my favorite... that's where I lose it. My GOAT was always R9 because he was able to do it club and country. And I said, if there's any...
Sorry, for the fan who isn't on your level.
The real Ronaldo. Real Ronaldo. Sexy, chubby Ronaldo. R9, please go do the name. Not CR7, not Cristiano. Ronaldo. Ronaldo Navario. I think I got it right, the full name.
Yeah.
But R9 was for me the greatest because he did a club and country. Zidane, club and country. But then Lionel Messi said, let me shut down this international conversation. Let me go win a World Cup, which was the hardest thing for him to do. And let me go win 2 Copas, which I think, you know, Ronaldo wasn't able to do and Zidane wasn't able to do. And also fit that up with...
Well, yeah, I mean, Zidane battled being French. He was never going to win the Copa.
And also, being the greatest Barcelona player of all time,
he's
probably going to get that number 10 retired, which has never happened. He's probably going to go get a statue. So the greatest footballer of all time, unfortunately, guys, we've got to shut down this conversation.
It's simple.
It's Lionel Messi. And our favorites will fall in behind everybody else.
It is. And the question on the screen here, Jace Parker, what if Ronaldo wins a World Cup, though? But he won't.
Never happening, so, brother.
And then the other point is, which my dad brings up, which he'll then, it's maybe a generational thing. He says that Pele is the best, but it's just, it's impossible to say, even if Pele was pound for pound the best footballer, who tested him to show that Messi has been up against the best defenses in football that have evolved through professionalism, and he's had to do it time and time again. Pele rocked up. A lot of the Oaks were smoking at halftime. Some of them were out of shape. A lot of them were on drugs.
Counting beach soccer goal, five-a-side goals, there's 1,000 goals which you can't account for. I mean, come on, guys. I'm with you with the Pele thing, but get out of here. Also, his club statistics and his club winning ratio. Yes, he played at Santos for the majority of his life, but
583 appearances for Santos. You know what I'm saying? Sure, 563 goals, amazing. But
who cares?
That's not Champions League football.
Go play against Johan Cruyff and the boys, and let's see what you got, you know, against, you know, those type of guys. And Maradona also needs to, you can't go, you know, without being said. He went to Napoli, won a league, they were nothing. Then he went to Barca. You know, I've got a lot more credibility for Maradona than I have for Pele. And I know that's controversial to say.
It is. But
yo, go play some club football. We want to see that.
We are looking for, how do we verify the GOATs? And I think Messi's a great example of a verified GOAT. And yes, what if this one did this or this one did that? But yeah, they haven't. Verified GOAT. Okay, this is where it really falls apart for me. Oh. Cricket. Cricketing GOATs. Obviously, the best cricketer of all time is Jacques Cullis. There's no doubt about that. He's the greatest of all time. Third highest test runs, 40th most wickets taken. He got lots of catches. He went from bald to having hair. He's got a double 100. He's an absolutely beautiful, wonderful man. He went to Wamba Boys High. He's the greatest cricketer of all time.
So
take your Garfield Sobers, your whoever, and get stuffed.
I'm feeling you that. He's the best all-rounder. Can we put on that? Because
yes,
there's going to be other... His cricket is like, we've got to jump into batters, bowlers.
No, but I feel the term cricketer is fine because he was cricketing the whole time. With bat or ball, he was cricketing the...
Okay, cool. No, I got you on that.
So...
Is it Yuck? Is he the best all-rounder?
Well, of course he is.
Oh, no, shout out. No, I was just...
The comments, you're jumping ahead a bit on the screens here.
Yeah.
If you are watching live on YouTube, of course, that we've got the screens here to kind of put some perspective onto this. Okay, so Jacques Cullis, in my mind, he's the GOAT when it comes to being the greatest cricketer. When it comes to best batsman...
Oh, Sachin, let's not even...
It's Sachin, right? Because he's got the most... He's got 15,921 test runs. That's so much... That's more than 2,000 more than second place. So Sachin's going to be the best cricket... The best batsman of all time. He's the GOAT of batsmen.
Yeah. Sachin...
He started when he was the Lamine Yamal of cricket.
Yeah, 100%.
And he just went on forever. So I don't think, again, verified GOAT. It's Cullis as a cricketer, Tendulkar as the batsman. This is where it gets a bit strange for me, is the bowlers. And of course, I'm quoting test stats at the moment here, and I'm doing it for a reason.
Really?
If you get into the bowlers, Muthiah Muralitharan, 800 test wickets, the only guy. The next best is 708. So again, if you're a cricket fan, you know your cricket, you're going to ask the question, okay, how many of that was on a spinning pitch with mumbas in the outfield in Sri Lanka?
Damn.
And you'll probably say a lot.
But here's my thing. I want to see how many matches played.
133. So I think we've got to give it to him because he's also taken...
He's the lowest out of that top three.
He's taken the most wickets in ODI cricket too. So you're looking at all these going, yeah, but it doesn't really matter. What are they doing in T20? Cricket has changed so much. That's what makes them so hard to call GOATs, because nowadays, none of those records are going to be eclipsed, right? Because no one plays this much test cricket and no one's as focused on test cricket. So all of these things here are set in stone. And
James Anderson is top three.
I'd hate to break it to the whole world, but James Anderson, by that metric, is the GOAT of fast bowlers. It pains me to say that. I can't even believe
Where's Glenn McGraw at?
Glenn McGraw is sixth highest wicket taker at 563. James Anderson 704. Bear in mind, James Anderson 188 tests, Glenn McGraw 124 tests. But if we're going on a metric that has to be standardized for verification, James Anderson is the GOAT fast bowler.
No, but wait, hold on.
But he's not.
Wait. Whilst we're looking at the screen, James Anderson. How long did James Anderson? He played.
Well, he played 21 years.
21 years. England, come on, you're telling me you have no depth in the... England backed James Anderson for 21 years.
Yeah, but he also stopped playing white ball cricket because he was too shit for it. So cricket for me is a tough one, okay? So we've got our three GOATs there. We've got Murali, We got Sachin and we got Kallis. So let's leave it at that for cricket. Olympics, swimming, easy one.
I want to tell you the greatest Olympian. We got the greatest Olympian for me.
Okay.
Is going to be Michael Phelps.
Yes.
And I know people are going to fight me. Michael Phelps, put him in a pool. You can put him in a pool today. They are going to come with some gold medals. Michael Phelps stopped swimming, came back, smoked a whole bunch of weed in that documentary. He said, I hate the pool. I'm never going to swim again. Then Team USA brought him back. And then Michael Phelps said, listen, I'm the GOAT. I'm the greatest Olympian of all time. Forget about that Michael Spitz guy you're talking about. It is me. Michael Phelps is my greatest Olympian of all time.
Verified. Michael Spitz, the GOAT with a moustache, perhaps. But Michael Phelps is the GOAT. Again, verified. This is it. You can't go against it.
Thank you.
I mean, if you're looking for female swimmers, Kate Ledecky, cool. She's got 10 Olympic medals. She could be the GOAT of that. But then track.
You said?
You've got to be Usain. It's like he's the GOAT of sprinting. Now, I know that you can go to Olympics, those kind of things, and say, well, this guy's got the world record and it stood for however long.
Where's Michael Johnson there?
Michael Johnson was 200, 400, but he's not the GOAT because Usain Bolt broke his 200 record and Wade van Niekerk broke his 400. So he's not in the conversation, unfortunately.
Yeah, finished, yeah.
Usain Bolt, verified GOAT. Of course, there's other guys. I mean, like the 800 meters that Michael Rhodesia, David Rhodesia guy.
Yeah,
got the world record. He was the GOAT of 800 meters. You'll have your GOAT of 1.5, all those kind of things. But ultimately, a verified GOAT in athletics, Usain Bolt. Surfing, another no-brainer, Kelly Slater.
Kelly Slater, just for what he, generational talent. People who didn't even like surfing, loved surfing because of Kelly Slater. He was the poster child of, you know, surfing. You know, I'm not a surfer, but I know Kelly Slater.
Kelly, yeah. Well, Kelly. You called him Kerry three times, Kelly. Which shows how much you know.
Just.
But the great thing about him is that, okay, 11 world titles. He was the youngest and the oldest. So he's, verified, absolute verified GOAT. And then, I mean, there's other sports we can try to bring into this. I mean, cycling is quite difficult because obviously the guy with the best record took the most drugs.
So Tour de Lance.
So we can't, unfortunately, have a verified GOAT in that just yet because there's current guys who will lay claim to it, but we need a prolonged period before we can say someone is the GOAT of cycling. Let's finish with one more.
Yep.
MMA, John Jones. He's my GOAT. He's had, you know, someone was saying the other day that Khabib Nurmagomedov.
I was going to ask because the debate is Khabib versus John Jones, but Khabib basically retired in his, I don't know if you call it peak.
John Jones has been arrested more times than Khabib has defended the UFC title.
Yeah, John Jones is going to get it together. I mean, he loves the penitentiary. I don't understand it. But is there any validity in the Khabib versus John Jones? Because everybody feels like Khabib kept on, if he kept on fighting, it would have been closed.
If he kept on fighting, but that's the thing. He didn't because he struggled to make weight. I feel he got to the point where he thought he'd done enough. Maybe dealing with the death of his dad was also difficult. Yeah. He had other guys he wanted to then mentor. He's not the GOAT. Khabib's amazing. But again, we're going back to the criteria. How do we verify GOATs? John Jones has not lost. His record is 27-1. That one being where he struck a guy with a funny elbow action and the ref on a technicality basically said, you've lost this fight. He was murdering this oak at the time. But his elbow angle towards the head was deemed illegal. So the only loss in his record is that. Otherwise, he has beaten everybody. The only guy that comes close is Demetrius Johnson. But Demetrius Johnson was called Mighty Mouse, strawweight division, tiny little oak. But still, he's also great. He's also had 11 title defenses. So those two would be the GOATs. I think because of such different divisions, they can both have GOAT status. But ultimately, the GOAT to MMA is John Jones, verified. I feel like we've just expended so much energy, but I think this is it, right?
Thank you.
You can fight us all day on those things. We're going to put together a verified list.
Please fight us.
Those are your verified GOATs. We will not actually indulge any more conversations around that. Federer fans, whoever else want to come out here,
love
Ricky
Federer.
Ponting fans, you can come at us, but no, you're coming at us with nothing.
We're coming with stats now. I love me, Roger Federer. He did it without sweating in my mind. But you know the GOAT is Rafa.
All right.
I mean, Novak.
It is. It's Novak until someone gets 25. We've got to have rules in life. Otherwise, you know, where are we? We've got to have structure.
James, right. Anybody talking crazy to us there before we need to respond?
Many people are disagreeing with both of you.
Give us like one or two.
But what if they come with? If they just come with you're wrong, or if they come with stats?
Someone asked an interesting question, and this goes back a little bit. Mr. Obi-Wan Kenobi brought this up a little bit earlier.
Yep.
And it could relate to pretty much the entire conversation you guys were having. Do these sports stars changing their specific sports impact them being GOATs?
That's a very good question.
Verified GOATs?
Yeah, again, you know, we look at Schumacher. He came out of the era where, he was like, it's a great example there because he was like the Tiger Woods. He made it more professional. People got into it a lot more. It wasn't just about smoking cigarettes and trying to bang pit girls. It was a lot more about the sport because of Michael. So Michael, again, this is,
But remember, as we were saying before, after Michael, Lewis makes it more marketable. Lewis takes it up that other level.
That's a good point.
You've got to beat the guy in front of you. So Lewis Hamilton made it more accessible, more marketable, took it to places where it wasn't there. Yes, Schumacher brought it there, but Lewis Hamilton took it from there and elevated to the top in terms of marketability. Those stats are all there. So it does happen, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Tiger Woods had to, you know, beat everybody in front of him in terms of golf, and even in the marketability stuff.
All righty, that wraps it up for that discussion. James, we need to get into the final section because I know Sandile wants to gloat about having all his calls right last week. We're going to make some more calls now, and we can do that right after this.
Yeah, got about.
We're back. All right, so another big sporting weekend. Not so much in huge amounts of fixtures, but in actual importance. We spoke about the Boks obviously playing Portugal. Other rugby to look out for, New Zealand versus Fiji. That'll be at 4:30 on Saturday, SA time. Australia versus Georgia at 7:45. The Bok game against Portugal will be at 5. Shout out Bloemfontein. This is your day. This is your big brothers. Day to get out there. And then Uruguay are taking on Argentina. They'll be at 9 o'clock SA time on the Saturday. In other rugby, we got Curry Cup. Now, for me, this is already becoming a two-horse race. Lions are putting their hands on everybody right now. So Lions versus Griquas, that'll be at 3 o'clock on Friday. Blue Bulls versus the Cheetahs. That's a big game at 5 on Friday. The Sharks will take on the Pumas at 7. No guarantees that they'll win there, seeing as they just lost to Griquas with Box in their team. And then Sunday, we wrap it up with the Griffins versus my team, Via Pia, Western Province, Vestlicka Provinci. I mean, look, there's also the Open Championship, which is being played right now. The show's gone on really long today. I was hoping to be a bit shorter so I can get back to the TV. It's being played at Royal Troon. The Open Championship is just so incredibly special. Currently, Justin Thomas has gone out with a round of 3 under, so he is winning. Weather is pretty shite, as you would expect in Scotland in summer. There is only 7 Oaks under par currently. Now, I'll get more into this if you are listening live on the Gareth Cliff Show tomorrow, but more of an open sort of preview, get into that. And then, of course, along with that, we've got Formula One, Hungarian Grand Prix. So, my calls for the weekend, pretty simple. Now, when you look at the Boks versus Portugal, it's not about the outcome, it's about the margin. So I am going to go with the Boks to win by 35. So if you're going to SuperBets on these sort of games, you go into the markets, what they will do is they'll give you a sort of handicap margin. So for example, they'll do the same for New Zealand versus Fiji. They'll do the same for Argentina versus Georgia. You know, in the Rugby World Cup, this is a really great way of betting with them is that outcomes are quite set in stone because the big team and small team. But what is that margin? So I'm going to go with the Boks being handicapped 34.5 points. So for 0.9, my 100 will get me back 190 if the Boks win by 35 plus. I think that's a pretty good bet. It's pretty simple as well. Sandile, on your side of your bets.
Yes, sir. Where should we start? Should we start with Formula One? Should we start with the rugby? Which one?
Well, you are going for your picks this weekend on the back of being all right last week.
Yeah,
you're going for Max Verstappen to win the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Yes, sir. Definitely.
You've got New Zealand at a Australia at a minus 18.5 against Georgia.
Yes, sir.
So you win by 19 and the plus. And you've got New Zealand as a minus 22.5 versus Fiji. So 23 and up wins you for that. Sweet odds, huh? 8.39. So your 100 will bring you back 939 in your SuperBets wallet.
Guys, yeah, back me again. As you can see, I'm on a roll. Shout out to the Spanish
You're
Affair.
You're on a streak.
Shout out to the Spanish Affair. Back me now, guys. I'm telling you, Max Verstappen coming back after all the madness that happened last time at the British Grand Prix.
Yeah, this is the thing about two champions, right? They bounce back and they bounce back pretty hard. I think your other calls to rugby are pretty good. Yeah. That New Zealand game is being played in America, which is quite interesting.
Hopefully they allow people through with tickets.
And that New Zealand team will be slightly more experimental against sort of lesser opposition. So they're going to run a few of their fringe players like we are doing against Portugal. Yeah. Of course, Rugby Championship starting. And then Australia versus Georgia. I think that Georgia team is pretty solid. They beat Japan, which is a good recent result. Mm. But that Aussie team, again, I think this is a great confidence booster. They just won two tests against Wales.
Yep.
Granted, Wales are horseshit, but it's competitive momentum. That's a really big thing. If you are new to playing, obviously with Superbets, if you use the code OTB, you will get up to 5,000 Rand in sign-up bonuses. So they'll match your deposit up to 5,000 Rand using the code OTB. It's a great way to get into it. This is a great way of getting into sports. We've got so many great big fixtures around. And of course, the odds are still open for Open Championship. It's already started, so we're not going to give you a preview on that.
Yeah.
Go Tommy Fleetwood, although you're disappointing me again. Same can be said about Rory. So those are our picks for the weekend. Those are your big fixtures for the weekend. What I do want to do as we close up here is announce that as of right now in this moment, 8 days until the Olympic Games.
Oh, yes.
Oh, this is so exciting.
Yes.
So the Olympics is going to be all about our show. I mean, next week it is about the show about the Olympics. Yep. I'm so excited. I cannot structure a sentence. There is so much to enjoy and get excited about the Olympics. It kicks off straight away with the sevens. So that's an easy way of getting into it with a sport that you know. But we're going to preview all the big sports that you should care about. We're going to give you a little crash course as to who the athletes are you should be looking out for.
Yep.
From a South African perspective, who to look for.
Yeah.
And we've got the Olympics. And then straight away, we've got the Paralympics. After that, of course.
Yep.
Yeah. So we've got all of that. We've got UFC coming up. It's the most blessed time in sports. There's no other way to describe that.
Yeah. No, it's going to be amazing. Guys, watch Sprint. I'm telling you now, I'm giving you a head time. Watch Sprint so we can start talking about our sprinters.
So that's the Netflix series for, if you didn't know that.
Oh, on Netflix. Sprint on Netflix. Yeah, it's going to be exciting time for the Olympics, guys. It's going to be great for sports. Sorry, I thought that was a given. My bad.
No, it is for me and you. But I mean, always remember, we are big sports fans. So we know these kind of things. You want to drop Sprint and R9 and other acronyms. Someone's going, the fuck's this guy talking about? All right, that wraps up for this week for a slightly extended show. Feel free to take us on about the GOAT verification. But ultimately, what we said today is now set in stone because we have a criteria. We are not just talking out of our nether regions. Those GOATs that we mentioned, they are undisputed GOATs. And they've set the standard for GOATness going forward. I think that's a good way of closing it out, right?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Can't believe we missed anything. Oh, no, wait. We have missed something. Because, as always, I'm going to... Look, guys, I don't care about this whole, this is my competition, this is my pool. I am winning the That's Gold Clip Drift pool this year.
Yeah, you definitely are winning.
I'm...
That's because you have a burner phone. Guys, if you see Ben's other random account there, please, it's a burner phone.
So, guys, I'm winning. If you go to
Mfundo, I'm backing you, brother. We'll share it down the line.
I'm taking you down. I don't care.
We'll share it down the line.
I've got enough friends. Clipdrift, that's gold. .co.za, okay? Every time a BOC team gets announced, you go onto there and you get the team, okay? So there, click on Portugal versus SA, and then you spin. It's so super simple. And then I'm going to get, I've already got tight forwards this whole time. So I'm going to spin right now.
Is it spinning?
Fuck. That's good. I got Andre Esthuizen. Okay, so I've got a starting back this time around, inside center. He's going to score 4 tries. He's so much bigger than the rest of them. Yeah. And then after the match, I can then see what prizes I've won. We're going to announce some prizes for our group as of next week. So don't forget to play that. I'm just excited about that. I'm top 5 in a pool, so we're doing
definitely
right.
James winning it's fine via Money Lebok. I mean, jeez.
No, he's nice.
Let me know how you spin and win. I mean, I got a forward again.
Yeah, Clip Trip, that's gold. That is the show, which has also been pretty gold this week. Sandile, as always, thank you so much. James, nice of you in the wings there. And we'll catch you next week for a big Olympic special.